It is Wednesday, the 21st of September, and this is episode 95 of Digital Outbox. Welcome along, another episode. I am Chris, and I'm joined by Ian tonight.
Hello.
Hope things are well.
Things are not too shabby. Last few days have been a bit nasty, but apart from that, it's all been good.
Yeah,
all been good. And there's loads. This is like, see, after that kind of quiet. I mean, remember we said August was quiet, and it wasn't really.
It never was.
Just loads happened. This is like mega loads.
Now even more's happened. So. Let's roll on with the news.
Actually rude. I should have said, how are you?
No, all good. Why wouldn't I be? I went on track yesterday, driving around Carlscombe, which is very nice. It's all good fun. Fun and games like Windows 8, Microsoft have released a developer preview of their new operating system. They kind of demoed it a little while back, and we did cover it briefly. But now they kind of let people have their hands on it, and they've actually released a demo version that you can download and play with. Looks an interesting concept where they've got effectively two operating systems in one. So you have an operating system called Metro, which is effectively, if you imagine what the Windows Phone interface looks like and put that onto your desktop, it's that with tiles and things. And then you've got your standard Windows desktop as well, that is a sort of secondary level to your operating system. An interesting concept, but I guess the idea being to unify everything together, so you have this one operating system which pretty much runs across tablets and across PCs.
Yes.
Interesting.
The one thing, Metro is a great name.
Yeah, it's good.
See if they launch Windows Metro instead of Windows 8. I just thought that was interesting. I downloaded it. It's running on my Mac.
Ah, okay. So you've actually got it running.
Yeah. So the latest version of VMware. So VMware 4 came out, and it's supported it fully. So I thought, why not? It's free. Let's download. Yeah. Not VMware. VMware's only 30 quid. It's a bargain.
I haven't got around to doing that yet. I'm interested to do that. I would do it on a virtual machine rather than try and piddle around having a proper full size machine going.
Yeah, and it's virtual machine, and also it does miss not having a touch interface.
Right, so you're not getting the full benefits of what it is yet.
But there's some interesting ideas in there. I certainly think they have tried to address. When Windows on a tablet doesn't work. You know, let's get that.
No, we kind of covered that last week that it was rubbish, didn't we? It was just.
Yeah. And so having this Metro front end, and it's all very. It's all GUI driven, but they've done things like, you know, I'm using the iPad and I've got an app up, and it would be great every so often just to have two apps, you know, side by side, and you can do that, you know, so just out the box, you can pull a couple of apps together and do it. And I think they're also focusing on speed. So, and it is a bit confusing. I mean, there's two browsers within Windows 8. There's an Internet Explorer 10 Metro, and then there's Internet Explorer 10,
which are different. They're not even just different flavors of the same, are they? They're different.
Nope. And the Metro browser, and bearing in mind Metro is basically the tablet front end, but the Metro browser won't support any plugins. So it's not just not supporting Flash, but it won't support Silverlight. It is HTML5 apps only, basically. So it's a bold step forward from Microsoft. Very much a line in the sand. I think they have seen the way the market has gone, and looking also at how the hardware, you know, how hardware now struggles with things like, you know, Flash on a tablet. You know, although there's loads of tablets out there supporting it, there's none of them support it, you know, excellently.
I think it is dying out pretty rapidly now. There's good options for video, and Flash interfaces now are dying out more and more. It's quite rare to see a website that completely relies on it.
Yeah, there was certainly a lot of elements within Windows 8 that I actually really liked. It still feels, and it's an early release. I mean, they're still 6 months to a year away from actually releasing it.
It's going to be a year before we actually see it in the shops.
Yeah.
So it'll be 6 months before we see a kind of release candidates type style release, I imagine, and then another 6 months to get the rest of the development done and finished off.
It still felt quite jarring going between both.
And,
it does feel like both.
Don't you get the feeling? I mean, that's my biggest worry here, is that I don't think that jarring will go away. It will always feel a little bit like two things stitched together. That
and if you think about how Lion now sits with things like you've got the launch pad and certain other features that feel tacked on from iOS.
They feel tacked on, but they tacked on in that kind of Apple-y way, which actually, you know, at least gives consistency.
I don't know. Launchpad is.
I never use Launchpad.
I still maintain Launchpad just for another device. But anyway, the
probably is.
Going back to that Metro front end, it still feels quite jarring going between the two. And there's still a lot of question marks around. You know, if you look at an iOS device. And Apple basically wrote Pages, Keynote for iOS, very different to the Mac versions. But it looks like from an Office standpoint that they're going to say, you know, it's a full Office that you run on these you know Windows 8 devices.
They've said they're going to write an Office suite for the Metro interface. So they are going to, because it's Metro programs. Basically, they're trying to get the operating system so it runs on ARM as well.
Yes,
ARM being mobile chip of choice.
There was a lot of confusion about that last week because there seemed to be some Microsoft representative saying Metro will be ARM only, ARM won't run traditional Windows programs, and then there was lots of clarification coming out later on saying no, it will. You know, we will support running Windows applications under ARM.
Okay, well, I mean, there still seems like there is confusion around that. I mean, certainly the news that we initially heard was that ARM would only run the Metro side of the interface, and it wouldn't run the other bits and bobs. So it would only run dedicated Metro apps. And a Metro app is effectively, like you say, it's an HTML5 app, but with added API level on top, so to allow sort of Windows functionality beyond what you would get on the web, really.
Yes.
So a future-looking operating system, how powerful it is, I guess, depends on how that API integration level goes.
And some other nice features in there as well. I mean, Xbox Live support, and it's not the kind of cut down version that came out a few years ago. It is, it looks like full and proper, you know, live. They have talked about cross, you know, platform gaming, turn based gaming, etc. It does look, you know, very slick. And I also think they are coming true on having a consistent UI across all the platforms. You know, that Metro interface from Windows Phone 7, it will be the tablet interface, and you will see it coming to desktop as well. So I think they've actually done something pretty bold, and it looks okay. It still feels, I think, and I think you've said it already, it is going to feel tacked on until we see it, you know, for real, and we see apps in there as well.
So I think what bugs me and bothers me is it going to be that kind of thing where they have this front end, which I guess is almost like your start menu, because the start menu's gone. So it is when you click the start button now, or it used to be the start button, it goes to the interface. And I was just... Is it going to be that, you know, I have to go to that interface then just to open up a new app, which then takes me back to Windows again? Am I going to be pinging backwards and forwards, or do I have a way? These are the kind of questions I guess you don't know until you use it, and maybe I should just download a copy just to see what that's all about, really.
And my gut feel is that ultimately I think it will be like dashboard within Mac that you can probably switch it off. So I think for some people, they will just find it gets in the way.
Again, businesses, you know, notoriously don't like going forward, so... But then again, I guess they should be looking at it as far as, you know, if they've got a Metro interface, they can start putting their own company interface on top of Windows to let you know users get access into only the apps they want them to have access to and things. So,
but this is probably Microsoft's biggest Windows release. You know, Windows 7 was a big change, but I think this is it's almost now or never for tablets for Microsoft. This is the final chance, really.
Yeah, Windows 7 wasn't again. It was the last of probably the desktop. Operating systems, desktop dedicated. And I think I've said it lots of times before, I'll say it again, I really like Windows 7. I think it's a great operating system. But yes, I think you're right. I think there is now a direction from both Apple and Microsoft to try and cater for everything in this one release, effectively. We will see. A miss for me is something called, they've put something in their operating system called Charms. That's definitely a miss. My lucky Charms.
But I think that What they've tried to do is make it easy to get to device and settings, and also to do things like searching and sharing. You know, so it's almost like the kind of almost like the basic utilities within a within a.
That's great, but why charms?
I don't know. I don't know.
Not right, I tell you. As I said, I like, by the end.
As I said, I like Metro as a name. I don't like charms.
Exactly. So yep, I will download and I'll probably have an opinion on it next week. But that is the direction that they're headed in.
And just to point out as well, I mean, they did hand out 5,000 Samsung tablets running this,
which are now making their way onto eBay for $2,000 or something stupid.
Yep, if you want a Windows tablet with a fan that that is running a very early, you know, beta bit of software, crack on.
$2,000, what a bargain. right, more Microsoft news. Let's stay with them. And it's Ballmer. He's opened his big mouth and said he's not quite happy with he's big everything, isn't he? He's not happy with Windows 7 sales, basically. He said, or rather, he was disappointed, I think is fair. He said that they haven't sold quite as many as they would have liked in their first year, which I guess is just stating the obvious, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they still won't commit to a number. We haven't sold quite as many as I would have liked in the first year. I'm not saying I love where we are, but I'm very optimistic in where we can be.
Well, and I think he's got right to be, as far as he's kind of said that the partners that they're working with at the moment are still kind of Android-focused because that's where their biggest sales are coming from. But now with Nokia being on board, they're going to be dedicated to the Windows platform.
And Nokia hardware, you know, has generally been pretty good over
they've
the last couple of
years. They've
got an
awful lot of experience of it. I mean, yep. Maybe not so much in the smartphone arena, but they've certainly got a lot of experience in producing hardware. So, and so they're dedicated towards the Microsoft platform. So maybe he's right.
Next 2-3 months, because everybody's talking about that they're going to get a phone out maybe before Christmas. And if they do, that will be, I mean, if they rush that out and it bombs, I think that's game over.
It seems hard to see how you're going to have a third operator in this market. Android sweeps up the, you know, generic handset with all the features that someone wants, and manufacturers like it because it's free to whack on their hardware.
And not just that, I mean, one of the guys at work picked up one of these Samsungs. The screen on it is amazing.
But that's because hardware manufacturers can just concentrate on the stuff they're good at. You know, they don't have to worry about.
You look at all the apps on there. They are lovely, lovely phones. You know, it's so impressive, and Android's one. They're going to have the biggest market share. I think they'll end up with the most features, and I think you'll see iOS now and catch up.
But iOS has still got that controlled desirability factor, hasn't it? So I think they'll always sell at a margin, and they'll always make a nice profit out of them because that's the only phone that everyone wants at the moment. You know, you don't hear anyone talking about when the next Android or the next X phone is going to come out. You know, they're all just talking about when the next iPhone's coming out.
They're all talking about October 4th because that is
the latest
new,
date.
That's the new date is October 4th, which isn't far away. I mean, that's only 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks and Tuesday.
We'll see. I'm still not convinced it's going to be any more than the iPhone 4S or something, but who knows? Intel and Google have got into bed with each other, basically. Intel are going to make a chip that runs Android. Is that right? I think I'm right.
Yeah, pretty much. Up until now, Android's certainly focused on ARM. You know, so from
as,
a mobile
as everyone does.
Yeah, mobile perspective, ARM's got it sewed up. But up until now, it's you know Android and Intel have been at kind of arm's length. But I think it was the day after build that Google made this announcement that they're basically partnering with Intel, and it really is to try and, you know, drive a market out round about Intel chips.
I was going to say that Intel are not a stupid company. In fact, they're a very predatory company, and they can see that, you know, with all these big companies dropping out of the actual, you know, desktop hardware market and consumer market, their chip sales are going to take a massive hit from that. And ARM potentially are going to take a massive growth in their sales. So I guess they just want to get in there now.
Yes. And the interesting thing for me was that years ago, see if I go back to when I was a kid, not as a kid, but, you know, as back to, like, you know, teenager and early 20s, you'd really worried about what processors you were buying. And it was that whole AMD or Intel and what was faster. And I remember getting a magazine and they would do all their, oh, look, this one's 3% faster. That's the one to
buy. And it varied per week as well, didn't it? It was just bonkers.
Oh, there was that whole, was it not 486 DX2? You know, all that nonsense.
Yeah, it was.
And in some ways, you just don't care. You know, it's just, you know, it's the latest one and you know it's fastest. But it just, what's kind of crazy to me is it's almost like that end of Wintel, you know, that whole Windows and Intel dominance.
Something you just, I mean, 10 years ago, or not even, well, 5 years ago, maybe even 2 or 3 years ago, you would never have said that could happen.
Nope. And it's the rise in mobile. I mean, I think it was Google had some crazy statistic about the number of searches. I think is now tipped to being more from mobile. A number of searches, or there was number of things on Google Plus was all driven out of mobile, and it was just the shift in people's usage is amazing.
That, I mean, again, it's almost seems exponential as well, doesn't it? I mean, I think there are now more smartphones than are our standard phones. I think that's another tipping point that we've reached that was always on the cards, but I think we've gone past that point now.
Yep, and I think there's more smartphones than people. I think that's just, I'm sure we could do an onion story about how there's now every person has 3 smartphones.
And it wouldn't be far off, eh? So just a quick Google story here. It's not really UK relevant, but probably will be relatively shortly. But Google Wallet has launched. So this is Google's tying in with the near field device. So the chip that they have in their latest Android phones, which effectively can communicate. Imagine it's for UK users, imagine the Oyster card. So you just literally, you sign up to have a wallet with either hooked up to your credit card or hooked up to a prepaid card. And you can then just hold your phone up to pay terminals and pay for small items directly and quickly. It just buzzes you to say, yep, successfully done. They're still trying to tie in some deals with certain carriers in the US, and then I'm sure talks will start here. Again, it's one of those things, probably a tipping point. You need chicken and egg between having where you can actually use this thing and having the providers to actually go and make use of it. But I think we'll see it probably in the next 6 months start coming over.
Sure, and I think the nice thing is not... So you mentioned Oyster, and it's similar to that. I think Barclaycard I've got. In fact, I think Barclaycard sent me a mail saying I'm getting one soon, one of these near field cards.
Yeah, I've got a card that's got one of those in it. Have I ever used it? I've only ever seen it in one place, and I think that was in McDonald's.
And I'm the same. I've seen it in, W. Smith's. I saw it in.
Okay. Yeah, I've got the little sign on my card that says...
it's all the high-end places we go to.
Yeah. Yeah, we just gave away something, didn't we?
Then, yeah. How's your diet going?
Fantastic.
the good thing about this is rather than just being a card, but you can tie in other, if you've got other shop cards or you've got offers, that can be tied in through the Google Wallet software. You know, so that's constantly updating. You can tie in, you know, if you've got shop cards for, I don't know, a clothes chain or whatever, you can load that into the actual, you know, Google Wallet as well. So
it updates that automatically as well while you're doing it.
So over time, I can see it starting to take off, but then there'll be obviously the crazy, oh, it's a security risk. There'll be all the freaks will come out and say it's bad.
Well, and it certainly sounds like they haven't got everything sorted, so it doesn't actually even tell you what you've bought or where. It just has a sort of list of transactions, I think.
And some of the reviews were quite interesting because when it worked, seemingly it worked, but there was people, some shops were like, why are you paying with your phone? You know, as if it was some sort of voodoo going on. And then it popped up and said transaction authorized. And they're like, oh, okay then. I guess that's okay.
Yeah, if you don't tell the shopkeepers what's going on, it's like, have you just really paid for me? I'm not sure what you've just done. Yeah.
Hacked. Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll keep an eye on that for the next sort of, I guess, 6 months or so. More Google stuff. Google Plus is constantly on the move.
This is the big war. This is a big social media war.
It's another war of the big tech giants. So
you've got to love it.
They have expanded a couple of features specifically, but their Hangout feature is now pretty incredible. You can have 9 people in your Hangout, and you can also broadcast that Hangout
live to new features.
Oh.
Sorry.
It is 9 people in the thing as well, though, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, 9 others can join your Hangout. So there you go. You could have 10 people in your Hangout. So, but you can put it on air.
We're both right.
Yeah, so you can broadcast out. You can broadcast out to an audience, and it'd be. I mean, they haven't rolled this out, as far as I understand. I think it was selected partners that are getting this feature. But yeah, you eventually may be able to watch us broadcast our podcast live, which would be fun, won't it?
And that depends.
Yeah, that does depend very much. So depends on how the diet goes, eh? Also, another big one of their biggest features and one of the most requested features of having search inside Google Plus, which was a bit bonkers that they didn't have it, but they are now implementing a proper search feature within Google Plus.
It does actually work. Yep. It does actually work pretty well. So that's been enabled in my account. I can go in and I can do a search Google Plus, and it brings back let's search for something like Glasgow. And straight away, I can see a whole load of users coming back, including. That's quite interesting because they said they didn't allow businesses, but I can see there's Glasgow Chamber of Commerce is in there.
So they haven't been wiped out yet. Yeah.
Yeah, but then there's a whole lot of stuff, you know, that comes back from locally, from where people have been posting local, and also things that have been mentioned, you know, mentioned in Glasgow. So yeah, and you can save the search as well, so that can, and I think they move Sparks underneath search as well. Yeah. So once you've done a search, you can see Sparks
was
moved
the kind
there.
Of. Yeah, Sparks was obviously the way that they were kind of doing search before, wasn't it? It was an interest areas. But this is obviously more comprehensive and easier to just do whatever you want to search for. They've added some extras to the Hangout as well. So they're going to add screen sharing in. So you can share what your desktop's showing, Sketchpad.
Which I think's massive to have that free.
So Skype charges if you want to share with screen with any more than one person, basically.
Yes.
And that's incredibly useful feature. So having that, again, Hangouts is maybe the new Skype. Sketchpad, so you can doodle around. And Google Docs, you can actually write and present together. So it's kind
of... And also, you mentioned that the on-air one, but at the same time as on-air, you can actually record it. So you don't need like screen recording software as well. You know, so you this is
what it actually,
and the fact it does all the swapping between who's talking.
I don't know if you've ever used GoToMeeting, but this is taking over from GoToMeeting. I mean, GoToMeeting is pretty robust in everything other than voice. It's very good at video and it's very good at the desktop sharing and giving control.
I've used both WebEx and GoToMeeting, and just the fact that this is sitting there as a free service that anybody can piggyback onto, and also there's an API that's been released for it as well, so there's a developer you can then start plug this into your app. Is amazing.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye out. Those features aren't all available to us yet, but as soon as they are, we will play with them, I'm sure. And it's also that no invitation allowed, no invitation required anymore. Anyone can sign up, so they've gone public, basically.
And something I didn't add into the notes, there was another post came out with another 7 new features, but it was all Android features. So there was a lot of customization on the Android app.
Yes, I downloaded the Android app and I haven't got any new features yet. So obviously that's still yet to come out for me.
And you can also join the Hangout from your phone now as well. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be, so poor Henry tonight stuck in Braithead getting his MacBook fixed again the third time.
Poor Henry, he's getting it fixed for free again.
He's getting it fixed for free and I only wish he had taken my MacBook to the Apple store. It's the face of an angel strikes again.
It must be his...
He is a very honest chap.
Yeah.
He is very honest. He probably goes in and they just feel like we can't rip him off. You know, it's just... But you can now join a Hangout from your phone. So very, very impressive feature set.
Yep. And again, moving so rapidly. And we'd like to hear much more as well. So.
Well, they'd said last week we've deliberately slowed down the release cycles. So there's, and I guess it was just a part of a ploy. It's all a big game, you know. So it was like we were slowing it down. We realised we've been releasing quite a bit. We've done, you know, like I think they'd rhymed off. We've done like 20 or 30 updates since launch, you know, in 7 or 8 weeks.
But who are they trying to slow down for? What, to let users catch up? To not, you know, a bit like, you know, the old Russian pole vaulter sort of only did their world records in 1 centimeter increments.
What was because he got I don't know, I think he got 100 grand every time he broke a world record.
So she got 100 grand every single time she broke a world record, so she did it in 1 centimeter increments and maximized.
But was it not is it Sergei Bubka?
Oh, the him, yeah, he probably did it as well. He's retired.
I've just made that name up.
No, he's retired now. He was the greatest ever pole vaulter. Come on. He was. Let me maybe even spit his drink out. Anyway, Facebook also making lots of.
He was the greatest ever pole vaulter. Look at the poster on the wall.
So Facebook have launched something called subscriptions. Now this is more for the kind of power users, or I would get web celebrity type people.
People like you, Chris.
Oh, like me, absolutely. So effectively, it's another level of associations on Facebook. So it's not just about friends anymore. You can have people who can subscribe to your feed. And effectively, that you don't authorize someone. Basically anyone can subscribe to your feed, and you don't get a say in that. And they can read your public posts effectively, and posts any post you put just to your friends doesn't go out to your subscriptions. So, for someone who wants to have a big group of followers, you don't have to have a page anymore, which was the old way of doing it. You can simply have subscriptions, and say it lets people have one account that they manage their contacts and Facebook through, rather than having to have two pseudonyms.
And I think the celebs before had like fan pages. Yeah, which I never really got my.
No, that's exactly it. It's effectively a secondary thing that they manage through their account, yes. But it's own identity. But it just got a bit confusing.
Yes. So I don't know. To me, it almost looked like a copy of Twitter, really, in many ways. Just that whole model that you can Facebook, you need to follow each other, you know, you need to be friended properly.
Yeah.
Whereas in Twitter, I can just follow somebody and that's it.
Yeah. So it's almost like a subset of Facebook, which is acting like Twitter. So yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yep. They have also updated their news feed. I don't know anything about this. What's going on there?
Well, if you visit Facebook right now, you'll see it.
Will I?
It's a bit of a mess.
Oh, right. Okay.
There's a few things that were updated over the last sort of 2-3 weeks. So subscriptions was one of them. They also brought out smart lists. So smart lists was, ages ago, they'd made some updates to how you do lists. So basically grouping people together. And then there was some updates around about privacy a few weeks ago that said, you know, when you do a post, it's now far easier to say only post to this group, so only post to Digital Outbox, only post to friends, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, now smart lists have come out, so they're looking at how you use Facebook and saying, well, we reckon these people go together in a list. We reckon these people go together in a list. So if I jump onto my Facebook just now, I've got a BA Systems list. So they've looked at people in my company and says, well, that's a natural smart list. We've got people from secondary school. So there's all the people I want to ignore because I never kept in touch with them.
I would be speaking to you on the phone if I really cared.
Yeah. And then I've only got one close friend. but that's because I added them. Basically, Facebook said I had no friends.
Right. So I have got, yes, close. Where does it tell you how many numbers you've got in each one of these things? Do you have to click on them?
Next to my smart list, I've got a set of numbers.
Mine only has close friends and family, and they've got none in each.
Oh.
Bless. Never mind. It's because I don't use Facebook. Do you think that's probably something to do with it?
And I don't tend to use it much either. I mean, I've hooked up Twitter to Facebook, you know, so if I tweet, it goes in Facebook. But I don't know. That annoys people who are on, you know, I mean, if I'm following them both, they're like, stop double posting. And I don't like doing it either. But then there's a group of people that don't use Twitter. Getting back to the story, yep. Just withering away, but they've updated this newsfeed. So if you look at your newsfeed now,
I say it looks very, very different.
You've got this concept of top story. So you'll see this, there's a kind of blue corner, almost like flagged against each post saying that this is a top story. You know, so I've got a Steve Corrigan, a top story, just watching Scooby-Doo with Zach. I'm sure. But for Steve, that's a great emotional, you know, moment. For me, that is not really a top story.
Oh, I see. They've got different shades of that colour,
Yeah. And you can mark things as top stories.
Okay, I get you.
So I guess it's starting to learn. So you're actually saying, well, actually, the fact that Shaq...
Can you unmark it?
Yeah, I've just unmarked Steve. This is no longer a top story.
Yes, there we go.
So if you mark it, it says we'll try. It doesn't actually give you long to read. So unmark it. We'll try not to put more stories like this at the top of your newsfeed. An interesting thing as well, remember we had a talk about how you don't always get everybody's posts?
No, because they do, the part of their deal is that the feed that you get, they've always filtered it to be yes. what they think is useful. I guess this is their way of saying, well,
so again,
what we
post,
think might not be what yeah. is true.
But you can change that. So against Steve's post, there's now a drop-down arrow, and I can say, I'm subscribed to Steve, but I only get most of his updates, but I can change that to get all updates. And it's the same if I look against Shaq, I get all his updates because he's my special friend.
I can't even begin to imagine what the database for Facebook looks like. It must be
no.
incredible.
But generally, I'm seeing people, I mean, you know, I'm looking, I mean, Lydia's put a post up saying, if you're hating a new Facebook layout ticker, change the language. So you change it to English UK, it'll change back to the previous layout, not all the, without all the top story nonsense. And there's also a ticker. So they've got this concept of a ticker within Facebook now.
But as with every single Facebook update that ever happens, everyone hates it for about a week. And yeah. then afterwards, everyone just accepts it as the norm.
Yeah. So the newsfeed, and this is part of the update, it's often got a time lag. So it's not instantaneous that you see a post appearing. So I've now got this concept of a ticker alongside the newsfeed. The ticker will show you the same stuff you've already seen before, but you'll see updates instantaneously. So it's trying to actually make it, I think, very much like Google Plus, because you see updates in Google Plus, you see people commenting, it is alive, you know, people are interacting there and then. And I think a lot of the updates we've seen with Facebook are really, they're very aligned now. You know, Google Plus had some unique selling points and Facebook's very quickly added those in. You know, so it's
added
got
some
a,
in,
it's
accelerated not, release on others, yep. taken in different directions on bits and bobs. So a bit
and
of competition.
The one thing they're really behind on is Hangouts. I mean, Hangouts just
yeah,
stands
they,
at a mile.
Because Facebook aligned with Skype, didn't it?
Meant to say, that was one thing that changed with Google Plus. Sorry for buttoning in. I'm yabbering away. They used to have this thing, what was it? Huddle. They had a huddle for mm-hmm. doing the kind of group messaging, but somebody else owned a trademark for Huddle. So they got in touch and said, we've got a worldwide trademark for this.
How
we'd like
trademark
to change it.
Huddle?
They've got the name Huddle trademarked for group messaging as well. Right. So it was a very similar sphere of, and Google were like, don't worry, we'll pick another name. It's now called Messenger. So I'm sure if you're Facebook, Yahoo, or MSN, you're sitting there thinking, you can't use Messenger, but then it looks like everybody does.
Everybody can, so everybody does.
So yeah. I don't know if they've just went for Messenger because it's almost a, you know, common amongst all the big companies that their product's called Messenger.
So he's having to pay a little young upstart, doesn't it, basically?
Scary thing is, Facebook's developer conference isn't until tomorrow.
I know, so all these releases are ahead of that, unless they're just going to solidify the releases they've already announced, but you would have thought they'd come out with something big.
Oh, there's a whole lot of talk around music players, media sharing.
There has been forever. That's a bit, that's a bit like
the
same
I don't know,
with
the rumours... The rumours seem really strong this week. Even if you look at the people talking at F8 tomorrow, includes the head of Spotify, includes the head of that crazy music DJ service that is popular in America, but we can't get it here. There's a few other ones that there. It all seems to be around a lot around music, and there's also talk around multiple sharing and multiple buttons now, so you can say that I've listened to something, or I've watched something, or I've read something.
Okay.
So interesting.
Watch this space. Bit of news that's kind of old fire now, but it's just that long since we had our last podcast. But Carol Bartz, head of Yahoo, I guess, got fired. But just fired via phone call, which sounds a little bit doofusy. But yeah, she wasn't happy and then tweeted out to everyone that she got fired by phone, and she was a bit disgusted by it.
The nice bit was she actually just pulled her iPad out and just to all employees, I've just been fired via the phone.
Yeah,
but and kept a whole sent from her iPad on it as well.
There are a couple other things that she did which weren't particularly becoming and kind of probably don't make her high in the job market at the moment. But I guess the telling thing was that I think she only had about a 35-40% approval rating within the company, by all the employees, and and also the stocks rate rose by like over 10% when she announced it, when it got announced.
But then, to be fair, Apple stocks risen about sort of 5 or 6% since Steve Jobs.
It's second highest ever point, I think.
Oh, I think it's more than that now. I think it's well over 400. I think it was up at 408 or 409.
Its highest ever was 406, I think. Anyway, it doesn't really matter, but whatever. But it's a heck of a lot of money and hasn't been affected. Fight numbers. As I think, you know, Yahoo, as she was going to go in as this kick-ass person to go and straighten them up and get them doing stuff. But again, we haven't heard too much of that. I know that companies get over-criticized for not, you know, being out there and in the market and trying to rush things through or whatever, but she didn't seem like they did. I'm sure she did lots, but there's not been that much other than we've hearing about chopping things out of Yahoo. We haven't actually seen what she's added back in. Is that fair?
Pretty much.
Maybe.
Yahoo's dead. My only bit I get scared about with Yahoo is got all my bloody Flickr photos.
They're still strong in advertising, I think, and things like that. There's still quite a big player behind the scenes.
I'd love them to sell it to Google. I just, you know what I mean? It's just, please buy Flickr.
Well, why would they do that when they've got Picasso already? Anyway, just a quickie, that Guardian app, a quite well-rated iPhone app, has now come out on Android, and they're trying to big it up. I mean, effectively, it's just the Guardian app on the Android. I'm not going to sniff at it, but it's good. I'm not going to get that excited about it either. It's free because you can have ad supported, whereas you can't do that on iPhone, although I think the iPhone's not particularly expensive anyway. But at least you get the option. They've kind of accepted that Android people don't spend money. and they're touting the fact that you can really customize your homepage, so you can customize it to what you want to read about, which is fine, other than their categories at the moment are relatively restricted. Like they've highlighted the fact you can have football as your top story if you want, but if it's anything other than football, then you're all lumped into sport, unfortunately. So they haven't got the sort of subdivisions you might expect, but anyway, yes, you can put on your homepage whatever particular news you want to see, and it's good.
And I even liked the, not being an Android person, I didn't know if this is common, but the feature where you can say download the, you know, update all the content at a certain time. You know, so before you leave the house every day, you can say 6 a.m. in the morning, update all the content for a bit.
So you can say when, I think you can tell it to do it when you're on Wi-Fi. And also you can, instead of just telling it to download particular stories, you can choose these categories and it will download those categories for you rather than individual stories or sections. So it's a bit sort of, a little bit more customizable that way. I mean, most phones are connected all the time anyway, aren't they? So it's not that big a deal. Maybe when you're on one of the Android, you know, Android tablets, that's becomes more important. And they're saying their iPad app is nearly ready as well.
Woo!
Woo! So you can get excited about it.
And so can you.
Well, yeah, it's true. Yeah. Okay. No, because I've got the BBC app, which is surely is just as good as you need.
You're such a negative, Walter.
Didn't cost
you know,
me
Guardian app. It's free, but you know, it's just a bloody Guardian.
But it won't be free when it gets to iPad, will it? They'll charge you for it. Adobe, they kind of try and work around the iOS flash limitations and I guess other operating systems as well. They have, I don't know too much about it, they released a new version of Flash Media Server, which can serve up video flash video to iOS devices effectively. Now, I've never used Flash Media Server. I'm sure it comes with a horrendous license cost. But it won't run your old Flash apps, so it won't stream out applications, but it will stream out all the video, which I guess is how Flash gets used most still on the net now.
And I guess I'm looking at things like, you know, you go to BBC News and it'll still say, oh, the player's not supported.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing for these type of organizations where they're serving out, you know, gazillion bytes of data, is going to be quite important.
The chances are, though, rather than spend the money on the licensing, I would imagine, seeing as they're already delivering up those videos inside their dedicated apps, it seems like they're probably likely to go for the long-standing solution, which will be HTML5 based, and one of the options as far as encoding goes.
Yes.
An Apple bug, pretty serious.
A really nasty Apple bug. Yeah, So I don't know if you know much too much about this, but there's
only what I read.
So there's a, I can't even remember the chap's name. I never put it in the post, but there's a kind of security researcher who's highlighted some issues before. So he's now been looking, basically he's looking at the user shadow files, and he's been digging around looking at password hashes for a particular user. And what he's found is that basically because there's a certain bit of the password is unprotected, that anybody who has local access to a machine can go and change anybody's account on that machine or get that user's password as well.
Fail.
Yes. and so obviously the fear is, it's, you know, and there's things you can do to protect it, you know, so you, for, yes, you do need local access, and hacker needs to be able to access your local accounts, etc. And you can turn off different services to protect it while we wait for Apple to release a fix, because no doubt they will, because it's a fairly, it's a fairly serious bug that certainly wasn't, it didn't exist in, you know, Snow Leopard and Leopard, you know, it definitely was protected. So whether it's an oversight, whether it's just something that's missed, but there's a, you know, see overall, if I look at, if I look at Line, there seems to be quite a few of these kind of, you know, almost really notable omissions that, that people are digging into and starting to see. And you do,
yeah, which
you
is
do
quite
wonder,
surprising, seeing as it seemed like it was an update rather than a, you know, a big dig around, you know, yeah, nothing absolutely gave you the impression that it was anything other than a bit of an update.
And I guess the fear is if you download something, you know, in the background, it's it, it could be running away and changing accounts, you know, and I think that's the fear. Then you've talked about a hacker could be able to run this at the command line, but
if they know your username password, they can SSH in and they can do things that they shouldn't be able to effectively, and then gain access to an admin account and do whatever they like. You know, seeing, I mean, again, it's pretty amazing that still, I mean, it's still a story that Apple has this happen to them. It's just not when PC happens.
No, and the scary thing, and I never realised, and fair enough, I'm only maybe booting it up once every couple of weeks. You mentioned Windows 7 earlier, and I've got Windows 7 running as a VM on the iMac. And I have to agree, it works really well as an operating system. I mean, I'm still XP at work. I almost hang my head in shame.
It is shameful. that was a stat, wasn't there, that's still the most widely used operating system in the world.
Yeah. But don't worry, we're on IE8. Woohoo!
Hooray!
But using Windows 7 and actually using it in anger, you know, for a good few hours over the last couple of weekends, I've been doing quite a bit of work, and it's actually really nice. The thing I'm surprised at is every time I boot, it's a bit like booting the PS3. The amount of updates that I get.
Yeah. It is a bit ridiculous. They usually have one big update a month, but yeah, it's once every week, isn't it?
But I felt like the PS3, you know, switch on the PS3 and you just want to play, I just want to play the Pro Evo demo. Oh, you need to download an update. Oh, and even I noticed the news feed this week, there's another PS3 update coming out.
Beautiful.
But seemingly, if you subscribe to that PlayStation Plus, they'll download these things automatically for you. And it's like, you sneaky dogs. Imagine turning that into like a chargeable service. Hang your head in shame, Sony.
I think one of the updates as well is an agreement to not take out a class action lawsuit when they remove features, which is a beautiful thing to sneak in there.
Especially after the year they've had.
Yeah, so now they're just putting in things to make sure they cover their asses when they cock up again, basically.
But don't worry, if you want to keep hold of the old terms and condition, get your lawyer to get in touch with us.
And you have to write a letter. You have to write a paper letter and send it to them if you don't want to be part of it. So you want to keep the old terms.
I need to get my fountain pen out and actually actually write a letter.
I don't even have one of them anymore.
What, a fountain pen?
I don't know.
I've never had one. Terrible, blotchy things.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, you'll notice... I just feel I should say, you've noticed that I've shifted the blame totally onto Sony when it should be Apple. Hang your head in shame.
Yes, okay, yeah, that's a good point. We should sound them out. That's bad. Bad form. Waterstones are going to make an e-reader.
Fail.
Well, I mean, in America, is it the Nook? Is that the Barnes & Noble Nook, or has Barnes & Noble got an extra one? Okay, so Barnes & Noble, obviously, they're big... book chain have got their own e-reader, and I guess Waterstones are trying to get in on that kind of same act. I don't know why they'd do better just to hook up with Amazon Kindle and try and do a cross promotion. Would be my thing, but I guess they just want a bit of that hardware market. But I think they'll end up spending more money than they gain from doing it.
Well, I think they did a thing a couple of years ago with Sony. You know, so they tried to do the tie-up and it failed miserably as well. And it's like,
how can you compete with Amazon when they're set up with, like we say all the time, they've got all the computer network, they've got the, you know, infrastructure, the payments, everything going for it, and they can sell the hardware at an amazingly cheap price. So why would you try and compete with that?
I read this and just thought, Alan Sugar's probably sitting there thinking, I can design an e-reader and it'll be like one of these crappy Amstrad emailer things, and that's what Waterstones are going to release, or they're going to buy some cheap knockoff thing that'll compete in price, but it'll be horrendous.
The only thing that could save them is if Amazon do go down their tablet route, which, we, by the way, we still haven't seen, I don't believe. So if they do go down their proper tablet route for their reader, then maybe there'll be a gap in the market for a cheap version. But I think that Amazon aren't going to stop their cheap version, so I think they're on a hiding to nothing. But
see anybody buying, even with a brother out and it was better than the Kindle, I still can't see anybody buying it now.
Well, I think the only way you'd get it traction is if they almost give it away and have it as a kind of almost like a library service rather than a
Sort of subscription thing. Yeah, yeah. You know, give us a tenner every month the rest of your life.
And you can take out
three or four books a month.
Yeah, and you can have those three or four, and you can have them for X number of weeks. And
yep.
That's it. So that's the only way I could think they could actually find a niche for their service.
Except I'm sure the book industry would be like, sod off.
Yeah, and that's it. Can they get the licenses? I mean, they're probably big enough to try at least. Okay. We've had Jeremy Hunt, the culture secretary, coughing.
What's happening in the course of the next hour? Well, first up after the news, we're going to be talking to Jeremy Hunt, the Culture Secretary, about broadband.
he's basically come out and said that he's going to be hard on companies and credit card companies and advertisers in making sure that they do not willingly promote sites and services which are known to have pirate material available via them. It's part of their kind of ongoing rampage to try and cut out all naughtiness on the internet. And basically just say anyone that delivers up services and content is going to be cajoled into making sure that they don't offer up naughty stuff. Is that a good summary?
Well, I think it would have been better just to have gone blah, blah, blah. Because all he's done is stand up there, typical Tory, spout out some words about what he's going to do. And I know this is turning into every week, I'm just going to say typical Tory. But it's like the old tough on crime, tough on causes of crime. I'm waiting for Norbert Tewitt to be in the background on his bike, telling everybody, oh, we'll get these pirates bicycling to court as well. But it's just a lot of nonsense, because it ultimately was just that here's what we should go and do, and it's up to ISPs to go and do this, and all these companies should stop, you know, letting them make money off the internet. And it's like, but it'll be hosted elsewhere, you fool. So you can do anything you like, but ultimately it's going to be a waste of time.
Well, I mean the more and more of these measures they bring in, I guess it's, you know, that they do have an effect, and as much as anything, they just bring it into the public domain so that people like my mum know that they know what should and shouldn't be done. And maybe parents can keep an eye on their kids more.
Yeah, so you're going to be running at your mum's for tea, and you're going to be, Christopher, you've been downloading more torrents.
Yeah, that would make my eyes open. What?
How do you know?
How do you know words like that, mum? But yeah, so it's, I don't think these are hidings to nothing. I think that the people who are dedicated will get around them, but it does stop, in some respects, you know, less clued up people. I think, you know, we forget that we live in this world all the time. We do things in the, you know, on the internet, and we can get round blocks and things, but there's plenty of people that can't be bothered to.
No, and this was when he's talking about stuff that's going to come in 2015. He won't be there in 2015.
Yeah, sure. It's spouting. But I think it does show a direction that we are going to see governments trying to control the internet more and more. Not always in a bad way, but just to try and appease big business, basically.
Yeah, and Google turned around and says, interesting, we think our policies are enough just now. So that was their considered response.
And Google's policy, and it's the only way they can operate, because if they're as bad, you know, if you say that when a network has pirate content on it, then they're a bad network. Well, Google are as bad as anyone. What they have got, and which is probably the direction that as internet users, we want to see they have a, you know, proper takedown channels that that work, and they can, you know, they prove that they can take this content off once they've been told that it's bad. Seems fair enough, I guess, if that's what's going to happen.
Yeah,
but it's up to the content owner. Content owner to ask for it to be pulled down rather than for it automatically be taken down. Newsbin, so talking about places with pirate material, they've Newsbin 2, which sort of sprouted from the death of Newsbin, which got taken to court. They are trying to find out ways of getting around the blocks that MPs want to put in place to stop people getting to the websites.
So BT was ordered back in July that you're going to have to block Newsbin come this October.
Yeah, and BT means by proxy all the other ISPs as well.
Yep. And it's not been clear. I mean, there was certainly controversy at the time because it seemed to be they were inferring that they would use the kind of child porn block procedures to actually start blocking things like Newsbin. And it's a... And, you know, getting away from the content, it was more a slippery slope. What happens if there was a site promoting riots, for example, would that get blocked?
Yeah.
You know, and where does that stop? You know, so if it's a site promoting something that's anti-government, does it get blocked?
Or anti-foreign government or anti-anything, you know? Does the line...
Is it
negative reviews of big companies that have got a lot of money to lobby? Where does it end up? And BT said their clean feed wasn't really the best piece of software to use anyway. They'd have to come up with something new. Anyway, so they're talking about having desktop applications and...
The Windows version is already out, seemingly. There's Windows ones out, and it seemingly is using some algorithms in the background to encrypt the communications. So no matter what the clean feed system that BT's got... It seemingly works around that.
Because effectively you can disguise any content as anything if you're clever enough and you've got the whole... I mean, once it's not having to come in via a web interface, you can do whatever you like.
And this is one of the things that, you know, campaigners have said before. The more you drive up, the more you try and shut it down officially, the more you drive it underground, it becomes even more difficult to track, monitor and stop. You know, people will find ways around these things. You know, and if you look at when Pirate Bay was shut down, another three or four spring up in its place. And Pirate Bay's still there.
That
nonsense last year about, oh, it's going to die, it's going to shut down, and we're going to jail all these people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
Good luck. the final story of the day. you take this.
Oh, thanks for that.
That's right.
So, there's a whole load of young teens, the youth of today, getting arrested for being part of Anonymous. And the Register, hats off to them. I mean, sometimes the Register go to town and some of their stories and other, I mean, they are like the Sun of the tech world. In fact, they are the Daily Mail of the tech world. but their headline was, Court bans man called Peter from calling himself Peter because he's accused of being anonymous. Which it just made me chuckle.
Yeah.
So a man called Peter has been banned from using the name Peter on the internet as a bail condition after being charged today with unauthorized use of a computer. And the chap in question is Peter David Gibson, 22, from Hartlepool. And he's amongst the three men and one unnamed 17-year-old charged at City of Westminster for offences in connection with the LulzSec and Anonymous hacks.
Which have progressively got more and more petty, young, juvenile and ridiculous, stupid and...
Young.
Any kind of moral standing they ever had has just been whacked. But nevertheless, a court meaning it's telling someone that they can't be called Peter because...
And the best bit was that the court records state that the bail has been granted in the following conditions. One, not to be part of any internet relay and not to participate in any internet relay action. So even just writing it that way just seems bizarre to me. But the second bit is not to use the internet using the name Peter. So it's all right if he goes on as like John or Chris, but he can't use his own name.
But it's all right because that will prevent reoffending.
Yeah. I don't know. I just get this vision of some old fart in a wig. You know, the court has decided, you know, and banging his
gavel.
Whatever that.
Gavel.
Gavel, that was it. So you're the cultured one. I'm the uncultured one. You're the culture.
Spent my life in a court. Yes. Right. Anyway, let's move on quickly before we dwell on that too long. Let's get on to some picks. And our only pick today is by Ian. I hope it's a good one.
You are such a letdown now.
I know.
Telling you, we're coming up.
I'm letting myself down. I'm letting everyone else down. I'm letting our two listeners down.
The worst thing is, you could have said Gears of War and nobody would have known.
And you just thought, I haven't played it yet, so it's fine.
Yeah, but it's never stopped you before.
That's true.
So the. Oh, it's just like we'll let a secret out of the magic circle there. My pick, and thanks to Tam who sent me an invite to this service, and I had it in my Insta paper marked down for like days before, but I just wasn't getting around to using it. It's a website called If This Then That.
So I quite like that name. It's good.
If This Then That. So that's ifttt.com, and basically it's putting the internet to work for yourself. So you create tasks following a simple structure. Once you've logged onto the website, you have a number of channels. So channels are like the different services that it supports. So you can authenticate your Delicious account, Dropbox, email, Evernote, Facebook, RSS feeds, Flickr, all sorts, Google Calendar, Instapaper, Last.fm. And once you've triggered these, or once you've set up these channels, you can then create triggers around about these channels. So, for example, I've set up a weather channel for Glasgow. And if it's going to snow tomorrow, I'll get an email.
Okay, yeah.
So little things like that. And you can also now look at recipes and see what's popular or see what's new. So if I look at most popular just now, if somebody tags a photo in Facebook, it'll download to my Dropbox. So you can set that up as a sort of a way of, you know, picking up a... If it's going to rain, send me a text message so you can set up an SMS service. There's some other ones I don't really like. You know, if you get a new Twitter follower, send an automatic tweet to them. And that to me is just like robot, that's robot tweeting.
Yeah, that's...
You know, but I mean, I can see, maybe I can see some people...
As a celebrity, maybe you'd like that. Who knows?
Well, as you are a web star now, no doubt you'll be turning on your subscription service on Facebook and also signing up to If This Then That. And setting up your new Twitter follower.
People, you know, spend hours just waiting for my next status update.
Well, I'm just thinking, if anybody follows you, you could say, yo, dog, thanks for listening to me in Digital Outbox.
There we go. Maybe I could do that. I've signed up now, so I will have a play. So,
but there's some interesting ones, like, you know, like if you star something in Google Reader, it'll then send it on to Instapaper. You know, so some services that aren't linked up at the moment, you can now get a nice...
So link. I guess you have to wait for them to have integrations into the bits that you're using, effectively. You have to wait for their tasks to be expanded.
In some way, I mean, if I go to tasks just now and I go create task...
Oh, there's quite a few, so...
You know, if I pick a task, so let me just pick one at random. So I could pick, like, Last.fm. Oh, I need to go and activate it. Hold on.
Shouldn't have started this one. But it looks like there's lots of services here. So Craigslist, which really isn't important to us, is Delicious email, Facebook feeds.
Yep. So I've activated Last.fm. So I can now choose a trigger. So a new scrobble track. So I'll fire every time I scrobble a track or I love a track. So let's do love track. New love track. Create the trigger. And then I can then pick what I want to then do next. You know, so I could mark it Delicious. I could send it to Facebook. I could mark it my calendar, mark it in Pinboard. I could make a phone call. Don't know why I'd want to do that. But those are the kind of standard things that you can then do. So there's things like, you know, if something happens, you know, within your calendar, you could get a phone call via Google Voice. And so there's certain things you could trigger off. And I'm sure it's going to be just back to how you want to use the tool and what you can get of it. But it's a very, very clever service. And it's also very well written as well.
Well, very attractive thing. And it's very clever the way it's here. I can see straight. I mean, one of the best things about this is just seeing services which you never knew existed. And now you can go find out about them.
Yes. And there's certainly things in here, you know, even like archiving your tweets to Evernote. You know, so Twitter, if you tweet a lot, you can't really get a good archive service. You know, so that's one way of doing it.
There you go.
Good. So yeah, stuff. Very nice.
So If This Then That. So that's ifttt.com. Good stuff. Yes.
And there's, I mean, there's one there as well. Google Plus to Twitter. So you put something up on Google Plus and it'll tweet it out. You know, so if you're wanting to... Oh, there you go. Remotely download a torrent by sending an email from your phone.
That makes you happy inside. Right.
There's a glow.
Well, the government will probably ban it. Anyway, that is the end of our podcast for this evening. So thank you very much for listening, getting this far. If you want to find out more, we are on digitaloutbox.com. And you can email us, info@digitaloutbox.com. And we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK. And Ian, you are?
I'm on Twitter as Sweeper. And my blog is iand.net, where I've put up my long rambling thoughts on Lion.
Ah, there we go.
Aha.
Good stuff. So, yep, thanks for listening. And we'll talk at you next week. Cheers. Bye.
Goodbye. I do like your talk at you next week.
Yeah. My new catchphrase, as well as welcome along, which was right back at you today.
I do like both. I have nothing. I see your talk at you and I raise it with nothing.